Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Today we're talking about breaking walls and restoring emotional connection. So we asked you in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group, what your biggest challenge is when it comes to breaking walls and restoring emotional connection with your spouse. And we have some great answers and solutions for you today. I'm going to be really honest. Breaking walls and having an emotional connection is a big challenge. And I know a lot of you are dealing with this on pretty extreme levels. And even in my marriage, it's been really challenging at times. Even when things are going really good now, it's still this kind of residual pattern that we have to work through of putting up walls. So whether your spouse is putting up walls against you or you're putting up walls against your spouse and you just really don't feel like you have a good connection right now, this podcast is definitely going to be for you. Before we get to that, though, we're going to share a client win of the week. Mark, we all good? All right. So our client win from the week comes from Dawn. She says, I have a huge announcement, everyone. My husband has come back home and we are working on our marriage together. I can say the last 5 months have felt like the longest, hardest, most difficult time in my life. And there were times where I wanted to throw in the towel. I am forever grateful for this program. I have learned, even though I thought I had everything figured out, that in order to have a healthy relationship, it starts with you first. You have to love yourself and learn your triggers to be able to love someone else and to learn effective ways to handle difficult situations. Thank you, Heather, for all your kind and positive support. And thank you, Mark, for leading me through that point where I had to explain and show people where I stand in this marriage. And yeah, this is awesome. We're so proud of you, Dawn, for doing the work. Again, like Mark and I were talking about the first time, so it kind of feels like deja vu to us. But it's always really great to get this feedback, right, Mark?
Yeah, we put a lot of work into creating content and putting our program together. We put a lot of work into helping clients. And so it's really nice to see, you know, all of these instances. You know, here we're just highlighting Don, where it's actually making a big impact in someone's life, where it's making a big difference. And this is a big reason why Heather and I are here, why we're not, you know, selling concrete or doing some other sort of mundane business, not anything against people who might sell concrete, but, you know, this is why we're here, because we really like making a difference in people's lives.
Yeah, it's fabulous. And we love seeing all of your wins. Thank you guys for sharing those over in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group. Again, encourage you to check it out and see how much you can be inspired by people who are going through situations just like yours, sometimes even worse. One thing I really love about what Dawn said here is that it starts with you. You have to love yourself and learn your triggers to be able to love someone else and to learn effective ways to handle difficult situations. Having your emotional connection struggle, maybe that's not the right way to put it. When your emotional connection is struggling, or you're struggling to have emotional connection, there we go, in your marriage, that is a difficult situation. I really love that she said it has to start with you first. And I'll be honest, like we put a question here in the Thriving Marriage, and we asked you, what is your biggest challenge when it comes to restoring your emotional connection with your spouse? We wanted to see where you guys are at and what those biggest challenges are. And we're going to address most of those in a high level overview here and give you some solutions to those. But Mark, I don't know about you, but as I was going through these answers, I found that at least like 40, maybe even like 50% of your answers is that it's your spouse's fault. Like I literally see like Bill says, my spouse, like my spouse. I see John says,
that's the problem.
Yeah, Kylie here says them, my wife, it's her, we can't even have connection if we're in the same room together. She hates me, Charles, on and on and on. And so a lot of people here are saying that the biggest challenge is it's your spouse, it's their fault, it's them, it's her. And I just want to go back a little bit. A couple weeks ago, we talked about taking 100% responsibility here. If you're saying that the reason why you don't have emotional connection is all because of them, then perhaps we need to look a little bit more on what our part in the situation is, because we know we can never control someone else. And when you do that, you're really giving all the power to someone else. And you're saying, I actually have no power here. I am not responsible. I'm not to blame. And you're putting all the blame and responsibility on someone else. And I want to make sure that we're taking ownership for our part so that we can move forward in healthy ways.
Yeah, a big reason why we really emphasize that sort of stance is, sure, there may be things that objectively your partner is doing and it's them. But if you were coming at this and you're saying, I want to fix the relationship, and at the same time you're saying, I have no responsibility, or I have, in other words, I have no control over the relationship, there's not a lot of wiggle room here to go forward, especially if the partner whose fault it is, I'm going to put that in quotes, isn't really willing to work on things. We're going to actually get into some of these principles here that get around this. But like you said, you know, much as many of the comments were directly saying, it's my spouse, my wife's fault, my husband's fault, a lot of them, even in a roundabout way, suggest the same thing, whether they say, okay, they're always lying. You know, someone said he knows what he wants, but he doesn't know how to express what why he wants it. Or, you know, his idea of talking things out is by yelling and screaming and accusing things. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. Or, you know, pardon the language, you know, there's someone else who said, forgiving him for being such an ass. Like, so yes, that's some responsibility. I need to forgive my partner. But really, a lot of that, even in that statement, a lot of the blame is this person's behavior over here. You know, they're saying they're a jerk and I have to work on just forgiving them, and that's it.
Right.
Go ahead.
Okay. We will absolutely give you some solutions today to deal with some challenging behavior from your spouse, some unhealthy behavior, to help build a better connection. And we understand that there definitely are challenges with that, but we want you to take ownership of your part. If you say that it's all their fault that we don't have emotional connection, that's like saying that only one person brings emotional connection to a relationship. And that wouldn't actually be connection, right? I mean, just think about this logically with me for a minute. Emotional connection means two people connecting. And so if it's all them, well, then you're missing your part. So just want to like bring that up right away so that we are able to move forward, because we want to determine here, do we actually want to resolve this? If we actually want to resolve this, then what can we do? And what are the most effective things to do? So let's dive a little bit more into some of the answers that we got of some of the most common issues. As you guys are listening to the replay, go ahead and leave us a comment. Let us know what some of the common issues are for you. And then we're going to go into some solutions for these.
Yeah. So we approached this and we got a lot of answers. We got a lot of answers.
Yeah.
And as I was preparing for the podcast, I was thinking, okay, well, how it's not going to be all that effective to go through each and every one of the different types of answers and give a different solution to all of these.
We could have had a full-on and podcast on any one of these topics, and we have. We've had entire podcasts on affairs, and we've had it on being friend-zoned, like, he loves me, but he's not in love with me. You know, we've had it on lies, and so we're not going to go into a solution for every single problem. It wouldn't work. We want to provide some general principles that are, you know, what we wanted to provide was how to create an environment that could be conducive for change. And I thought that was a really good place to start, because there are a lot of problems that could really create a wall for restoring some connection. So I think a good place to start is with the ideas of a guy named Carl Rogers. Now, Heather, we borrow ideas from a lot of different places. We have our favorites, right? Like, you have some favorites in terms of who you like to go to for ideas. I know we talk about Tony Robbins at times.
Earl Nightingale. Yeah, John Gottman.
Gottman's a really big name in marriage. If you guys haven't like looked up Gottman and you're having marriage problems, it's not a bad place to start. But we look at a lot of people. But I think in terms of this sort of thing, I really, in terms of relationships, I really like Carl Rogers' ideas. So he, if in case you're not familiar, Carl Rogers is the founder of the humanistic approach to psychology. And so he would go out and he'd teach other counselors how to do well. And he said, hey, if you want an environment where your clients can change, you're going to need three things. And why I'm going to explain this in a second, but why I'm relating this to relationships, to couples. I mean, if he's telling counselors, this is the environment for change, and you're wanting there to be a lot of change in your relationship, I think it's applicable. I don't know. I think it is. So he talked about three conditions, which are empathy. He uses the word congruence. Another word for it is authenticity, or basically, is each person able to be true to themselves, say what they really mean? I'll explain that a little bit more in a second. And then the third one is unconditional positive regard. Now, I absolutely love how he himself described this. So I'm gonna read a quote. Occasionally we like quotes. I'm gonna read a quote. So Carl Rogers says, to be with another in this way means that for the time being, you lay aside the views and values you hold for yourself in order to enter another's world without prejudice. In some sense, it means that you lay aside yourself, and this can only be done by a person who is secure enough in himself that he knows he will not get lost in what may turn out to be the strange or bizarre world of the other, and then can comfortably return to his own world when he wishes. Perhaps this description makes clear that being empathic is a complex, demanding, strong yet subtle and gentle way of being. And it was a little bit long, but you know, I really like the quote a whole lot. We're going to keep referring to the first recording here, but I remember Heather, you linked it right to some of our teachings the first time around.
Yeah, I thought that was really fascinating. You know, there's truth found in so many different experts in different places. So Carl Rogers talks about empathy, congruence, and unconditional positive regard. And it sounds a heck of a lot similar to our PATH method that we teach, right? PATH, and this first one is gaining perspective. So that empathy there, I love that he says, you lay aside the views and values you hold for yourself in order to enter another's world without prejudice. And that is such a very eloquently way to articulate, of what we're trying to do here is we're trying to get outside of our own head. Because I sensed, it was actually pretty obvious, most everyone in the comments here in the Facebook group was like, it's them, it's their lies, it's their affair, it's them being on social media, it's them saying that we're friends, all this stuff, right? And what happens is we get into a lot of victimhood ourselves, right? And we get into our own emotions. And instead of seeking to understand where our partner's coming from, we start reacting. We start reacting emotionally. If we just take a step back, though, and ask ourselves, why are they doing this? Why are they saying this? Why are they engaging in this unhealthy behavior? Why are they being so hurtful? Why are they putting up walls? Why are they emotionally distant from me? We start to open our minds to seeing things from their side, okay? And we enter their other world, and we try to do that without prejudice. Mark, how can someone in a situation as intimate and close as marriage step inside their spouse's head for a little bit and not get like defensive? How can you do it without prejudice? How can you do it in a way that you're just seeking to really understand them? because I think this is a huge thing a lot of people miss.
Well, I mean, if we look at some of these obstacles, this would be quite the challenge. I mean, if you're dealing with a partner who's engaged in an affair and is actively hurting you, that's a big challenge to say, okay, let's set aside this pain for just a second and let's step into their head for a second. A lot of times, you know, the way I approach these sort of things, I understand that most people do not view themselves as the bad guy. I would say in most cases, there's a few instances where someone says, yes, I know I'm doing something wrong. And then there's a but I need to do this to be healthy for myself. And even still there's this kind of twinge that I'm doing what I need to do. If we tie it back into our, like, the principles we were just talking about, this is really about that authenticity piece. Within like Carl Rogers' theory, that authenticity or congruence, it's really about aligning where you want your ideal self to be with your actual behaviors. And so they're saying, hey, I'm not standing up for myself. I'm not getting what I need out of this. I'm gonna do something about it. And so they go off and they have the affair, or they separate and they say, I need to have some boundaries and I can't be with you anymore. Or they say, I need to, you know, stop sacrificing my own needs and feeling overwhelmed while I focus on others. And when you can find that description, and this is always what I'm looking for when I look at for this unhealthy behavior, when you can find that description that says, that describes them in such a way that they're the good guy, even when they're doing some unhealthy behavior, I feel that's a really good place to start with some understanding. I want to give it a caveat, not that we are condoning affairs, not that we're saying that the person committing the affair is a good person, not that we're saying the person who's lying or getting involved in drugs or disconnecting and, you know, zoning out on social media, they're not necessarily getting what they need in healthy ways, but they are trying to meet some needs. And those needs are very much legitimate.
Yeah. I think this is one of the challenges, but it's where our coaching and our perspective to help people, our clients that are going through this, is so powerful. So as you're listening to this, watching live or the replay, ask yourself, why could my spouse be emotionally withdrawn from me right now? Why could they be putting up walls, right? We're not saying that, again, that the behavior itself is the best way to do it. But if we look at the underlying reasons why we're doing what we're doing, when we put up emotional blocks, when we withdraw emotionally, it's a self-defense mechanism. We want to protect ourselves from some kind of pain, or we feel like we need to do that to get something that we're just not getting right now. And so when we uncover what those reasons really are, then we stop focusing on the symptoms of the problem and we actually focus on what we call here the root issues. Mm-hmm. And when we solve the root issues, then those symptoms that are so painful, also known as the unhealthy behavior, resolves itself. So that's why it's so crucial that we don't just focus on the symptoms. That's where most people get really hung up, because it is painful, it is hurtful, it causes us to want to emotionally withdraw, us to want to put up self-defense mechanisms, us to, you know, to become defensive or justify ourselves or blame the other person. That's very normal and natural, but it's not going to lead to resolution. So, Mark, why don't we see if we can apply this to some of the specific situations that we got from the audience, how we actually use empathy, congruence, and this unconditional positive regard.
Okay. Should we start off with the hard one, the affairs?
Let's start off with the hardest, might as well.
Let's start off with the affairs, because I think this would be a difficult situation. Here is, objectively, most people would agree that being in an affair is not a good thing. It hurts other people. So how do we have empathy or positive regard for this? A question that I like to apply to a lot of these situations is, what is the unhealthy behavior providing the person. And a lot of times we found, Heather, that people in affairs, they are seeking out some way to meet some needs. Another way to ask this, or another question that's very similar, is like, what is this person asking for by engaging in this unhealthy behavior? So if, you know, your partner is like, is off with this other person, what is it that they're looking for? Are they looking for some connection? Are they looking for someone to accept them for who they are? Are they looking for someone to be interested in them? I see that a lot, honestly. You might have a perfectly fine relationship, but, you know, things have gotten boring and you haven't really been seeking each other out and you haven't really been enjoying spending time together. And here's someone else who's genuinely interested in who that person is as a person. And they're asking questions and they're saying, your hobby is so interesting, tell me more about it. And a lot of times it can be something like that. We also see other situations. I was just reading about someone who was, they said that their wife has left them for another man and is going out on all these getaways and leaving him with the kids. I can see it very easily, like how this person is probably feeling overwhelmed and doesn't know how to step away from their responsibilities with other people and is looking for a way, you know, it could be part of it. But with, you know, something like affairs, we're saying we want to understand the feelings of another person. That's what we're trying to do here. If we applied that other condition, this congruence or authenticity, if we can find ways to offer what's needed within the marriage, it becomes a lot easier to reconsider the marriage. And if we look at this not as this person is hurting me and this person is a terrible person for committing the affair, but, you know, we have that positive regard for our partner and say, you know, this is a person that's maybe hurting, and this is a person that who's desperately trying to find something that they need, it takes away a lot of the sting and allows us to approach this person and actually discuss things.
Yeah.
Not that this solves everything. You know, this is a step, a way to create an environment where things could be different.
Yeah, it brings down that defense mechanism, right? It brings down the guard there as you create that bridge of understanding. I think one thing that's really fascinating about humans, okay, is that at the end of the day, we all pretty much want the same things. We're just going about it in very different ways. So I'll give an example. Like with my husband and I, sometimes the way that we parent our children looks very different. He tends to be very, very strict. I tend to sometimes be a little more lenient and understanding the whole situation. And at the end of the day, that could cause a lot of friction, could cause a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of hurt. But when we realize that we have the same goal, that we want our kids to be independent, we want them to be respectful, we want them to make good choices and have a close spiritual connection. When we realize at the end of the day, you and your spouse want the same things. Everyone wants to feel loved, appreciated, valued, supported, safe, trusting, right? We all want those things. And so what we really need to do is strip away that we're kind of just going about it in different ways and get to the heart of what's really wanted here. And when we find out what's really wanted, then we can work together as a team to get there. So now, instead of being on opposite sides of the table, I'm against you, you're against me, and we just get into, I mean, who relates to this? We get into the blaming game and the pulling away game and the manipulation game and all of the drama of the emotional reactions. And instead of that, we get on the same side of the table and we say, okay, this is what we want. Let's figure out how we can get there together. And when you're in an affair type situation, like we're talking about right here, the reality is that you have a much stronger foundation in your marriage that your spouse is very likely to want to come back to that. When you are in an affair, the affair relationship is a very unstable ground. It doesn't have a strong foundation. The studies show that those relationships do not last. of those that actually do get married, which is a small percentage. Most of them, like, it's a really high percentage, 80 to 90% ish, if I'm remembering right, end in divorce. And so while they are going about meeting those same needs that we all have in an unhealthy way, when we can show them that they can meet that same need in a healthy way together with us, that's what really starts to open that door there and build that connection. Mark and I, we've worked with hundreds of couples who've gone through affairs, and tens of thousands of students now have gone through our programs. And so we really understand the core reasons why people have affairs and the core steps that people need to take if they want to resolve that affair and have the relationship work out. And it usually, you know, almost always comes down to, I don't feel appreciated. I don't feel like I'm good enough. I don't feel like there's any fun here. I feel overwhelmed. I feel overburdened, you know, all these different things. And so then they try to meet those needs outside the relationship. And then when that partner that wants to work on the marriage with them shows them they can meet them inside the relationship, they are very, very likely to come back and have that be resolved in a really healthy, beautiful way.
It at least sets the stage for that, for them to be able to come back. Otherwise, I don't think, you know, you just simply don't have any chances at it. Now, with all this said, we don't want to discount boundaries, self-respect, anything like that. You know, if your partner is causing damage to you, it would not go over well if you are not being, you know, congruent or authentic to yourself. And so this is always part of this as well. Almost always when I've been working with clients, there's almost a predictable arc with as a relationship comes back together. And, you know, as things start improving, we remove the sources of pain. We start like providing some of the things that are needed. We build up some comfort and trust, and then it plateaus. And almost always the plateau, it's funny because I've gotten to the point where I'm just expected. The plateau is where they get to this point, the partner says, I can recognize that things are different, and I just don't trust that these changes are real. It's almost always because my client hasn't been authentic or congruent with themselves, as in they haven't, their ideal self isn't actually matching their actual behavior. And so we always shift this more towards, you know, with affairs, this is where we say, okay, let's talk about boundaries much more heavily. Let's talk about how this is going to be more balanced. Let's talk about how you are going to ask them for some security in return for what you're offering. And because you are creating this balance and you're saying, you know, I'm going to be addressing my needs. We're not going to be like pushing anyone's needs down or sweeping them under the rug. It feels more genuine and people end up being able to build that trust up and changes. What I'm getting at here is these three principles, the empathy, congruence, and unconditional positive regard, at many stages of the game, do a lot to set the stage for things to get better.
Yeah, I would say it even applies, you know, some of you talked about being in the friend stage, you know, maybe you're not dealing with a major affair or major lies or trust issues, right? But they just say, I love you, but I'm not in love with you, or we're just better as friends, or you're just kind of friendly and you have, you know, a passionless, sexless type marriage, and you're just going through the motions, like just being friends, the same thing applies. Why are they just being friends? Why do they not want to be more intimate? What's holding them back? Right, applying that empathy and then speaking your truth as well, saying what you really would like to have happen in this situation and asking your partner to share the same. And then how can we work together as a team on that? You know, that's really a powerful formula for building that emotional connection.
I'm actually remembering like an example of this congruence when it was taught like many years ago. And because they were talking about how the counselor themselves should be authentic within the session. And they showed us a video clip of this person who was coming into a session quite angry and lashed out at the counselor. And the counselor calmed things down, was very empathic,
regarded the person very positively and calmed things down. And then they said, you know, when you lashed out like that and you said this to me, whatever, I can't remember what it was, like, you know what? Honestly, I'm removed enough from this that it wasn't painful, but I can, you know, if we had a deeper connection, that would have been very painful for me to hear something like that. And I found that really interesting that they made it, like in this example, when we're looking at like techniques and stuff, that they made it very personal in a safe way. But it was very much about being, you know, allowing for the client to be congruent or authentic, but also being very authentic themselves and providing that feedback. I just found that really fascinating because, like, typically, like a lot of other approaches, it's very like I'm like an observer and I'm hands off and I'm taking a step back and it's not being very personal at all.
Right.
A lot of other theories. So I liked that one.
Yeah, and we're going to go a little bit more into that congruence, you know, especially when we've got lies going on. And a lot of you mentioned a lot of lies. Maybe they aren't affairs, but they're different types of lying. Even just not being true to our own emotions is a form of lying, right? So, you know, sometimes Ben will come home from work. I'm like, how was your day? Fine. Is everything okay? Yeah. Like, immediate red flag. Like, no, he's not okay. And no, not everything's fine. Right? Which is a little bit of a form of lying. But what really happens here is that they aren't able or feel safe enough to open up about their emotions or their desires. Or, you know, maybe they get home and you're like, where were you? And you're suspecting that they're out running around with someone else. You know, we got to think about, are they going to be open to answering that kind of question? So Mark, you had some good examples with that, you know, kind of like drilling our spouse and expecting that this is going to lead to a good result. And really not realizing that we aren't really a safe place for our spouse to open up.
Yeah, I always find like the accusation of lies really interesting. And because we assume that, you know, the person is lying because of some sort of fault in themselves. And to a certain extent, yes. Like that person, it would be healthier for them to have more trust in the people around them. But quite frequently, there's another side to this, like you're mentioning. And, you know, especially with things like something like an affair, and they're coming home, just like you were saying, they're coming home and you're asking, where were they? Is there really an answer there that is going to be satisfying whatsoever? No, because if they tell you the truth and you say, well, I was off with this affair partner, that's a terrible conversation to have. And there's going to be a lot of anger. And if they lie about it, say, no, I wasn't off with this affair partner, well, they've lost again. And there's no room there for that spouse who's, you know, lying frequently to have any sort of win here. It's lacking that unconditional positive regard. It's lacking that ability for partners to be authentic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I'll tell clients sometimes is if you don't want to know the answer, then, you know, if you're not ready for possible answers, it's probably better to not ask, or it's probably better to prepare yourself for answers that you might not want, if that's possibly what's going on. But I mean, that's a whole other topic we can get into.
Right. Including how to actually bring up difficult subjects and stuff like that. But the point here is that your spouse is probably conditioned, okay, to not wanting to open up about things. Why is that? Mm-hmm. Well, you could say it's all their fault, or we could also look at the reality that it's partly our fault too, that maybe we didn't receive them sharing openly well in the past. Maybe they wanted to express something that we did that hurt them, and instead we got super defensive and turned it all on them and name called or yelled at them or got really angry or manipulative, you know? And so we taught our spouse that it's not safe to open up to us for whatever reason. And we just got to take ownership of that. So if your spouse really doesn't want to open up to you, if they don't feel comfortable about sharing their emotions or their desires, they don't think it's going to end well, what is my part in that cycle? For me, I had to get really real and sit with that for a while, because that's the pattern that Ben and I have had for years, right? Is he'll just close up. And I have had to look at, okay, where in the past did I not receive him well? Where in the past did I not make him feel safe? Where in the past am I getting very defensive immediately without really listening to understand? Okay. And then when I said, oh my goodness, I'm totally doing those, and I could see all of my part in the cycle, then I could be like, okay, the next time Ben opens up about something, I'm not going to get defensive. I'm going to apply path process, and I'm going to seek to understand and be empathetic without getting defensive myself. You know, it brings to mind the very beginning of that, that quote there. Well, the middle part is like, you have to be secure enough in yourself that you know you will not get lost in what may turn out to be strange or bizarre world of another, right? Or hurtful world of another. So it is a little bit about becoming secure enough in yourself that you can hear their side, that you can step into their shoes and seek to see it from where they see it, because you don't feel so insecure in yourself. So for me, for me, I was like, I had to stop being so insecure. And that was my part. I kept contributing to the cycle, was that I was insecure. So then I would get very defensive when then Ben wouldn't feel safe to share and open up. So the more I worked on my own internal feeling of security, the more I could get negative feedback from him. And it was a positive thing rather than like a devastating thing that was just caused more emotional reactions.
So what's interesting is this is actually a really big strength for Jen and I. I'm not to say that we're better than we have our own struggles and sensitivities, but we do have Jen and I have a lot of empathy and patience for each other. So, but there are times when, you know, I know Jen is feeling like I can't be open with Mark, and she'll there'll be little signs like, I don't want to talk about it. She'll put up those red flags there. What's interesting in our dynamic, it's still the same principle. I'm confident enough in my own self, secure enough in my own self that I can enter into her world, and I'll say, okay, what's going on? I don't want to talk about it with you, she'll say. And I'll respond, okay, like, do you not feel comfortable sharing this with me? And she's like, I don't want to talk about it right now. So me being secure in my own self, I can go to her and say, hey, I know that I've listened to you very well in the past, and I would really like to be here for you right now. And but it's okay if you don't. And almost invariably, like, if there's that tension there, and you know, someone, one of us comes at the relationship like that, then we always end up talking about. But like here, it was just like a different sort of example of the same principle, where Jen and I feel very secure in ourselves. So we approach it, we say, I know that I'm approaching this with a lot of understanding. I know that I'm a safe place for you to share these things. I'm going to remind you of that. And it works out really well with that. Now, not everyone is going to be in that sort of position, but it's just a slightly different angle of the same principle.
Right. Yeah, for us, I had to tell a new story, which is T and path, right? Tell a new story of, hey, I know that in the past I'd get really defensive, and I'm trying to do things in a new way. We talk about home messages, right? The home message is, I am a safe place for you to share how you're feeling. I am a safe place for you to be honest. I am a safe place to work through these problems. I am a safe place to have an emotional connection here, right? So you creating a new story about what you want your reality of your marriage to be, and then communicating that in a compassionate way to your spouse, saying, hey, I know I haven't done this well in the past. I'm wanting to do it better, and I'm wanting for you to feel safe here to open up. Is that something that you can help me with? Is that something you want to work on with me? You know? And as you're just really vulnerable and open like that, that creates that connection and allows for those conversations to open up and allows your spouse to then open up. And it does take time sometimes if you've had some really unhealthy patterns, you know, to get that going in a positive momentum. But over time, they'll see, oh, she is a safe place. Oh, he does trust me. Oh, I can trust him, right? And then you're able to build that connection.
So we have a lot of problems. But I think the point we're trying to make here is this is a really good place to start. If you can really inject some of that empathy, that authenticity, or allowing for authenticity from your partner, and you can, you know, inject that unconditional positive regard, you're going to create a situation that is going to be much more conducive for change, for things to shift, and for the relationship to get better. Is that by itself going to solve everything? No. But you have created an environment where you could solve things. And that's the point that we're making, is this is not just the solution by itself, but a good place to start.
Yeah, a good place to start to get that door open there to build that emotional connection. Really quick before we go marriage mythbuster, I just want to share a quick 5-step process that's helped me be more authentic. We talk about that congruence with myself and with Ben. And it's really changed things a lot, from going from emotional reactions, defensiveness, blaming, not taking responsibility, all of those kind of things, to really connecting with who we both are. So when I get upset or I get bothered or I get fearful or he pulls away and I don't know why, I go through these 5 steps. I ask myself, like, what am I really upset about and why? And it takes a little bit of awareness to do that. Right? That's not something that we're taught how to do. We are taught how to just react, say the first thing that comes to our mind, just to withdraw or whatever it is. So what is really bothering me here and why? Then the second one is, do I need to solve this with Ben, or is this actually more my problem? And here I check with myself, is this my insecurity, or is this actually something that I need to solve with Ben? Is this a problematic behavior in a relationship that does need to be worked on? If I decide it's my own thing, then I need to work on that insecurity myself. If it's our thing, then the third step is ask your spouse, when is a good time to talk about this? My temptation is I want to resolve everything quickly. He wants time to process. So I usually say, when in the next 24 hours is a good time to talk about this, this, and this, or just this? And he'll say, tonight before bed. Okay, great. Then we talk about it, and I seek to understand where he's coming from. I'm also authentic and congruent to how I'm feeling. I'll say, like, I felt unappreciated for all my sacrifices during the family reunion when you just blared your loud music and didn't let me rest at all. It felt like I wasn't as important to you as your family, right? And then I listen to his side and seek to understand where he's really coming from. When we come down to it, we find those common goals. Mark and I talk about common goals, that we all really, at the end of the day, have the same kind of goals. We all want to feel appreciated. We all want to feel supported and trusted and worthy and good enough and loved and cared for and all those things, right? Then the fifth step is, how can we work together as a team to achieve that goal? And then we come up with an idea of what we're going to do so that we can both feel good about this going forward. So those are the kind of 5 steps that I found to really uncovering my authentic self rather than my emotional reactive self, taking care of what I need to take care of, bringing it up in a way that frames the conversation to be healthy and productive, not the blame game, not the pointing fingers, not the accusations, not that you're lying and it's all your fault, but here's what I'm feeling. How are you feeling? Where were you coming from? That empathy, understanding. Right? So we've got the congruence, we've got the understanding, and then seeking to see the best in each other rather than the worst, working together as a team to get what we both really want. So hopefully that is helpful to you. I know this is a lot. Again, we took like a ton of problems here, Mark.
We reduced it down to like 3 things. Well, we can even say 1 thing, because like this is like the basis for like the humanistic psychology. But yeah, it's being really reductive.
Yeah. And so encourage you guys, if you're struggling with these things, if you want to know how to go through the fair, how to bring up the challenging conversations, how to uncover those root issues, why they're being emotionally distant from you, why they're putting up walls, then reach out to us. That's what Mark and I and the coaches here at High Thrive Coaching do every single day. We help people just like you. So you can apply for a free call with us at highthrivecoaching.com/apply, and we're happy to help see how we can make the next few days, weeks, and months of your life the best ones of your marriage as well. All right. So Marriage Mythbuster here. Mm-hmm. Marriage will make someone change their ways. Have we ever heard this one before?
Yeah.
We hear sometimes like that women or men, but sometimes women will try to get married to a guy to change him or to save him, like rescue the bad boy. Mm-hmm. I've heard about it. I've seen it in movies. It's a thing out there.
It's a thing out there. The stereotype is it tends to be women, but you know, there's shades of it with men too. I will specifically see this sort of myth or idea pop up with affair relationships. You know, it's mm-hmm. this idea that, okay, yeah, this person is cheating on their spouse with me, but you know, if I can secure him or if I can secure her, it'll be different with me.
Wow.
This sort of thing. But yeah, it's this idea that when people settle down, that partners will magically become more faithful, that they'll start paying more attention to them. They'll be more loving, be more present, if they can just secure the relationship, perhaps with marriage. You know, another version of this might be, if we can just, you know, if we have a child, then we'll be more secure as a couple. And this belief, I believe, comes from insecurity quite a bit. They say, I don't feel secure with how things are right now. It's an attempt to gain that extra measure of security. Because if you're married, okay, you got that piece of paper, you got the wedding vows keeping you together. If you have the baby, then of course he's going to commit more. Now, here's the thing. Does having children help with things? It does. I would say having had children, I've matured quite a bit through that. Having to focus on other people's needs to be a little bit more selfless has really given me a lot of perspective over the last many years. So it certainly is possible to bring about change. It's just, like I said, it's coming about from this insecurity, and they're believing that if they have more control, that they'll get more control over the behavior or their partner. As I mentioned, I will see this in affair relationships, but I also see it in young or inexperienced relationships. The thing is, like I said, it can happen, but it doesn't guarantee it. And the trick is to not count on marriage or children or other big life shifts to create change in problematic behavior. That's the real solution to this. If you're going into this as a solution, it's going to create problems. If they going into a relationship expecting things to change, you are going to create a situation that is bound to create disappointment. Because what you're doing is you are setting up expectations without communicating those to your partner. That's really what this is about. I've said it's about insecurity, but it's about insecurities, but it's also about setting up expectations without communicating them. And this, you know, I see time and time again, many, many times, that sort of environment of not communicating expectations things fall apart. Much better is an approach of open and honest communication, where if someone is really hurt by their partner's behavior, there's an ability for feedback. If you need more security in a relationship, you'd like to feel closer, more connection. If you're looking for more maturity, more responsibility, there should be room for feedback and support. And that's the much better direction to go with this than say, well, I've got a plan. I'm going to get them to marry me, and then I'll get what I want from them. And I just feel flabbergasted that like that sort of idea comes into people's head, because it does not take into account like the other person, how they feel, their own agency or choice in the matter. It's not a healthy sort of belief.
Right. Agreed. And I like the one with the affair that you think that getting married to you is going to make them not be someone that cheats. It's got to be really real.
Oh yeah, I just responded to someone in Facebook who was describing their partner who their wife who left them, went and started another family, and then 1 year later that relationship, that marriage is falling apart. It's like a disaster, and so now they're like coming back and starting to talk to the person on Facebook again. That's the norm that I see. And sad that, yeah. You know, the person said, oh, well, maybe if I marry my affair partner, everything's going to be rosy now. It's just, anyways.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark. Thank you everyone for joining us. Next week, we're going to talk about apathy, boredom in marriage. This is one of those sneaky issues that creeps up on couples over the years. Now, Mark and I have been both married for several years now as well. And so we get this.
I'm going to point out, like, because that's sometimes people, when you say we've been married for several years.
Not together, no.
Yes. We like to make that very clear because Heather and I actually live in different states. But yes.
As well. So we're going to talk about apathy and boredom in marriage and why it's such a sneaky little devil to leading to bigger marriage issues. So stay tuned for that. And thank you so much for joining. We'll see you guys next time.
All right. See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.